This Marketplace podcast is supported by Invest Puerto Rico. What's next in innovation? That's not the right question. It's where. Puerto Rico, more than just a tropical paradise, it's innovation's paradise, where startups and global players coexist in a vast and vibrant ecosystem, where talent runs deep, highly skilled, and bilingual. Plus, the island offers the most competitive tax incentives in the U.S. If you believe your business can go anywhere, Puerto Rico is the place. Find out more at investpr.org/marketplace. Again, that address is investpr.org/marketplace.
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
We have on the program today the past 5 days in the global economy, wrapped up in 4 short minutes. We've got quite literally money to burn. And also, what happens when we don't pay enough to park our cars? From American Public Media, this is Marketplace. In Los Angeles, I'm Kai Ryssdal. It is Friday, everybody, the 13th of March. Great, as always, to have you with us. We have come to that point on a Friday afternoon where a look back might be in order. A discussion of what happened in the U.S. and global economies and why said things happened. Here to do that with us are Lynette Lopez from Business Insider and Sudeep Reddy from The Wall Street Journal. He is in Washington. She is in New York. Hey, guys.
Hey, Kai.
Hey, Kai.
All right, so we're going to spend 4 minutes, you guys, picking apart this scenario. Here you go. Oil prices are down. They cratered again today, something like 4%. There is zero inflation in this economy. The dollar is strong and getting stronger. The stock market, while bad today, is still reasonably high. And yet consumer sentiment out of the University of Michigan this morning dropped for the fourth straight month, Sudeep. So start picking at those threads. What's going on and why don't we feel good?
We don't feel good because we've seen this all before. Oil prices, we've already seen the effect of that. We've seen it over the last few months. This was the big story over the holiday season, yeah, that we got some benefit from that. Oil prices, of course, at least gas prices are starting to creep back up.
I know. What's up with that?
So we've seen some of the benefit from that, and people, it's losing a bit of its shine. Of course, oil prices could drop again, and maybe that will deliver a little bit of calm and relief. Inflation is low, but wages are also low. So
well, exactly.
Nobody's happy about that either.
Which gets me to Lynette, because that's the wage piece, right? The inflation wage
Everyone knows that was exactly what I was just going to say. Americans just aren't being paid enough. So no, we're not excited yet. We are seeing that we are employed, but you know, the jobs that we have are not giving us the living that we desire.
But our dollar buys more now. The dollar is strong. We've been talking about that a lot on the program.
The dollar is strong, but can we talk about do regular Americans, regular people every day, do they feel the strong dollar? Is that something that, I mean, I know that I'm going to ring the alarm when the dollar and the euro are at parity, but I'm a nerd, and that's what I do. That's what nerds do. So I think that regular Americans who are just trying to fill up their gas tank and buy school supplies for their kids and, you know, keep this economy going aren't aware or care very much how the dollar is doing. You know, maybe they do. I don't know. But whether or not the dollar and euro are at parity, I don't think that's what's really going to get them excited.
Well, then, Sudeep, what is going to get American consumers excited? Where we can have Michigan consumer sentiment numbers come out and just blow our doors off? Because it's been 6 years that consumers have not been excited.
It has been 6 years. They're more excited than they were
six years
ago. They're getting a little bit more excited. You have to see some serious wage growth to get people really excited. Seeing a weak euro isn't enough. You're only going to be able to plan one of those vacations, if you can even plan a vacation, given where wage growth is right now. You're not going to be buying a whole lot of foreign cars. You might be able to buy one if you can even afford that foreign car or anything else. But most of the products we buy from abroad that most Americans are buying are already cheap products anyway. So it's not like you're going to see huge benefits, and those benefits aren't flowing all the way through the system that quickly yet. So maybe they will over time, but that's a slow process that isn't going to lead to a whole huge party at any time soon.
Lynette, other than wages going up, which are largely out of your mind and Sudeep's control, right? What's it going to take for you to feel better about things?
what's it going to take for me to feel better?
So,
about
you know, Congress
things.
Is going to start digging in on the debt ceiling again soon. So we're going to have that whole dysfunction,
man.
Right? Corporate profits will be, you know, gangbusters.
They're still going to be great. Corporations are going to continue to buy back stocks instead of throwing that at R&D and increasing wages.
As we saw this week, right? Billions of dollars in stock buybacks. So help me find
billions
my happy place, yo. Come on.
I don't know. Maybe it's in a Bush-Clinton flashback presidential election. I don't know.
I'm not going there.
I doubt that would be really helpful either, actually. is this what we're doing? We're depressing everyone today?
On a Friday. On a lovely Friday.
Guys,
and with that,
we got
to go. Lynette Lopez from Business Insider, Sidhu Preti from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks, you guys.
Thanks, Kai.
Bye, Kai.
I'm never having you two back. You two are downers.
That's not true.
Wall Street today was incredibly down. We'll have the details when we do the numbers. All right, so speaking of corporate America and profits, for those who work in big tobacco, controversy is just part of doing business, and it has been rough sledding this week. First, there was a report from the Institute of Medicine pushing to increase the minimum age at which it's legal to buy tobacco in this country from 18 up to 21. Then today, a group of public health experts writing in the British medical journal The Lancet calling for a tobacco-free world by 2040. From the help desk at WHYY in Philadelphia, Marketplace's Dan Gorenstein has more on what that all might mean for the long-term forecast for big tobacco.
Every year, 500,000 Americans die as a result of their smoking. 9 million are sick from their smoking. And then Stanford professor Tom Glynn says the CDC estimates we spend $300 billion dealing with the fallout from that smoking.
When someone goes into a store, buys a pack of cigarettes, it costs the American taxpayers about $10 in lost wages, lost productivity, and health care.
Yes, you can stack up the public health arguments like matchsticks to condemn the $100 billion U.S. tobacco industry. Plus, fewer people are smoking, and those who do smoke less. But
we need to be aware that the industry has been thriving throughout this tough period, and they're thriving now.
University of Michigan economist Ken Warner says today profits are strong. Companies have cut costs, and they have expanded into things like e-cigarettes. But Warner says manufacturers are doing something he hasn't seen before, raising prices.
With an addictive product, you want to pick a price that is not only going to keep your smokers smoking, but in particular is going to encourage kids to smoke. So if I'm correct about this, they're probably taking the view that the cigarette market is not going to be a terribly strong one a few decades down the line here.
Capital Securities Management Analyst Steve Marascia says he's not ready to bet against big tobacco.
It's a smart cat with 9 lives. And it is still a product which people want.
Marascia says just on his way to work today, he saw 3 people smoking in their cars. I'm Dan Gorenstein for Marketplace.
Teach for America, the nonprofit that recruits college students and professionals to teach in schools for 2 years, has a bit of a recruiting problem. This year's applications are in and the number is down. While Teach for America still does reject more applicants than it hires, this is the second year in a row that the application number has dropped. Marketplace's Nova Sappho explains there are a couple of reasons why.
You have to hand it to Teach for America spokesperson Massey Rich. He doesn't miss a chance to recruit.
Well, it's too late to apply this year, Noah, but I'd love to get you an application for 2016.
I can think of few things more terrifying than me shaping future minds, but over the last decade, Teach for America has had little trouble recruiting others. Until 2 years ago, applications have dropped 20%. Rich points to an improving job market.
We're looking for the same kinds of young leaders that many of the top corporations and best places to work are looking for.
To a lesser degree, there's also the controversy surrounding Teach for America itself, like alumni who've been associated with reforms like standardized testing. That's been polarizing, says Sarah Mead. She's with an education consultancy that just published an internal study for Teach for America.
Some of the critics of those changes have really focused on Teach for America in a negative way.
And education cuts in recent years have led to an image problem for teaching as a whole. Enrollment in teaching colleges is down. Tamara Heiler is with the education think tank Third Way.
Millennials tend to have a pretty poor perception of the teaching profession.
Yup, millennials. Hyler conducted a survey of college undergrads.
They want to be entering careers that are going to be seen as sort of opening doors for them. And I think a lot of times they see teaching as actually closing doors.
For its part, Teach for America is focusing on the positive, like the 11,000 of its alumni that it says are still teaching. I'm Nova Sabo for Marketplace.
There's a saying about profligacy that I can't put my hands on right now. It's something about lighting $100 bills on fire just because you can. The idea here being senseless waste, of course, of money in particular. But it turns out burning money sometimes is not such a bad thing. From KPCC here in Los Angeles, Jed Kim explains.
We begin at the arcade, electronic garden of childhood delight, hell on a parent's wallet. And what game burns money like no other? The claw machine. I give it a go. I give it several goes.
What is the most likely? Football.
Football.
All right, football, you're mine. Failed again.
Can anyone actually win at this thing? Yes. His name is Richard Kimbo.
I'm not bragging, though.
Wait, how? What's your success rate?
Oh, it's like 50%.
His secret? His job. Kimbo works at a trash-to-energy plant near Los Angeles. 5 days a week, trucks back into the plant's warehouse and dump garbage into an enormous pit inside. From his glass booth high above, Kimbo operates an enormous claw that picks up about 5,000 pounds of garbage at a time.
The claw grabs the trash from the pit, feeds it into a hopper, which leads to a chute that goes into the furnace.
Matt Eaton is a division engineer with the LA County Sanitation District. He says the waste burned creates steam, which spins turbines, which provide enough electricity for about 20,000 homes. Eaton says the facility is a great alternative to dumping in a landfill, especially for things that can't be recycled.
If you push down, it will go down.
So, because of his job, Kimbo isn't burning money when he works the claw. Unless you mean literally, in which case he's totally burning money. That's because starting a few years back, part of the garbage burned here has included actual money sent from the Federal Reserve. Deborah L. Y. is with the Fed.
One of the primary responsibilities for the Federal Reserve is to ensure that there is adequate currency in circulation.
That means keeping counterfeit or old torn bills out of our wallets. Y. takes us down to the sorting floor. Employees push carts holding stacked bundles of cash. Carts can hold 400 bundles. Each bundle has 1,000 bills.
So if it's a dollar note, that's about $400,000. If it's a $100 note, it's about $40 million.
In one cart, through the bars of the reserve's vault, you can see rows upon rows of shelves stacked with cash-laden carts. Last year, the L.A. branch received 3.1 billion notes. Every single one has to be sorted by giant, intricate machines. Nationwide, about 5,000 tons of money get shredded each year. That shredded money used to go to landfills. Then, in 2011, the Fed formalized a recycling program. The amount of recycled money has gone from 30% to more than 90%. About a third of the shredded cash goes towards making electricity. The plant where Kimbo and Eaton work gets all of LA's bills. And on the days the shredded Benjamins and Hamiltons do arrive, it's no big deal, says Matt Eaton.
It's treated like any other source of waste. People don't come out running when we see the currency. If it wasn't shredded, maybe, but because it's shredded, no, it's like any other waste.
Eaton says the amount of energy the money produces in L.A. is enough to power 100 homes. Or one stubborn claw machine for long after all my quarters are gone.
Oh, come on, come on, come on. Nothing, nothing. That thing didn't even budge.
I'm Jed Kim for Marketplace.
Coming up,
New science is validating ancient wisdom about the importance of sleep, of renewal, of what we are calling unplugging and recharging.
Arianna Huffington sleeps on the job. She really does. But first, let's do the numbers. The Dow Industrial's off 145 points today, 0.8%, closed at 17,749. At one point, by the way, the blue chip's off 265, so they bounce back from the lows. The NASDAQ off 21 points, 0.4%, finished things at 4,871. The S&P 500 dropped 12 points, 0.6%, 2,053 at the bell there. For the week, the Dow off 0.8%, the S&P 500 dropped 0.9%, the NASDAQ down a full percent. 0.8%, 0.9%, 1%. There you go. We were talking about the dollar earlier, right? Foreign exchange broker FXCM jumped 20% today. Its fourth quarter earnings released yesterday beat most analysts' expectations. Caterpillar crawled down 1.1%. Deere dug down 0.75%. Bond prices fell. The yield on the 10-year T-note rose to 2.11%. And you're listening to Marketplace.
From the Marketplace Datebook, here's a look at events coming up Monday. The Federal Reserve reports on industrial production for February. The National Association of Home Builders reports on builder confidence in the single-family housing market. And musician Nancy Wilson of Heart turns 61. I'm Michelle Phillippe.
This is Marketplace. I'm Kai Rizdal. If you're driving while you're listening to this, you're eventually going to have to find a place to park. And if you're going to have to find a place to park that's not your driveway, you're probably going to have to pay for it. And if you're going to have to pay for it, you're going to be annoyed. Because then, if you're like most people, you're going to wind up circling around looking for that empty spot. And if you find that empty spot, you're going to have to put money in the meter. Parking is a big deal for cities. Big deal meaning big revenue source. Gone, though, are the days when you could pop a quarter in the meter and be good for an hour. So, Marketplace's Tracy Samuelson now on pricing strategy and how we park.
On a freezing cold day not too long ago, Jan Guo agreed to meet me on the mean streets of Manhattan to talk about one of his passions, parking. Seriously. We circled the block a few times.
If you look at these cars, right, one out of three of them is actually searching for parking.
Guo is a professor at the Wagner School of Public Policy at NYU, and parking is his field. He points out there's no open spaces, but lots of cars on the road. He says studies show that, on average, a third of cars in a downtown area at any given time are looking for parking.
Yeah, so this guy's slowing down and pulling over, like maybe he's looking for a spot.
Yeah, so why they are searching? Because it's too cheap.
Too cheap means about $3.50 an hour, which is what metered parking costs in much of Manhattan. And Guo says that low price means people would rather circle than pay for a private garage.
If you're a reasonable person, you are willing to spend maybe 30 minutes searching around instead of $20 right now into a garage.
Tell someone the price of their meter is too low, and most people will probably disagree. Probably pretty strongly, says Rachel Weinberger with Nelson Nagard Consulting Associates. Weinberger says the average meter rate for the high end of a city's range is $1.15. Accounting for inflation, that's actually on par with the country's first meters.
So the first parking meters were installed in the 30s, really at the behest of a merchant who felt like his employees were parking in front of his store and he couldn't get them to move, and so he petitioned the city council to put meters in on his block.
But if the price hasn't changed much in real terms, demand for parking has. It's just that raising the price to reflect that increased demand is really tough. Weinberger says pricing for many cities is more political than scientific.
We sort of lost the will to change the prices. And it's particularly humorous to me that somebody might be going out for dinner for, say, $200, and yet they're loath to pay $6. Let's say it's 2 hours for dinner on top of your $200 dinner bill.
But in the last few years, some cities like Seattle, Pasadena, San Francisco have started to use systems that try and take demand into account when setting the price of parking. Lauren Matern is the manager of parking policy and technology at the San Francisco Municipal Transportation Agency. A couple of years ago, they started a pilot in certain neighborhoods in the city.
Every 6 or 8 weeks, we adjust the rates up or down by 25 cents an hour or 50 cents an hour.
Until sensors on the parking spots indicated that at any given time, there's about one open space per block. The rates were also adjusted based on the day of the week or the time of day.
And then there is a ceiling and a floor to that. So we can go as low as 25 cents an hour or as high as $6 an hour.
So in one neighborhood, the marina, that meant increasing rates on a busy street and dropping them on a nearby quieter one.
Basically, by adjusting rates, we're able to draw some of the demand away from the busy street and giving people a bargain for parking on the less popular street. So you're able to sort of price shop for parking for the first time in that neighborhood.
Matern says, on the whole, the average price of parking in the pilot neighborhoods actually dropped. And no more circling looking for a spot. I'm Tracy Samuelson for Marketplace.
Today, you might be surprised to learn, as was I, is World Sleep Day. The World Association of Sleep Medicine says more than 100 million people globally aren't catching enough Z's. And that's not just bad for our health, it's bad for business. That's the theory, anyway, from Arianna Huffington. The co-founder and editor-in-chief of the Huffington Post lays it out in a book called Thrive. It's all about bringing rest, relaxation and meditation back into our daily lives and into the workplace. And she speaks from personal experience. Arianna, thanks for coming on.
Great to be with you.
You start your book writing of an incident in which you basically woke up to this realization. Describe that for me, would you?
So it was about 8 years ago when I collapsed from exhaustion, burnout and sleep deprivation, hit my head on the way down, broke my cheekbone, got 4 stitches on my right eye. And that was the beginning of this journey that I've been on, of really coming to in my own pool of blood, and nobody had shot me, and asking the question, is this what success is? And new science is validating ancient wisdom about the importance of sleep, of renewal, of what we are calling unplugging and recharging.
Without discounting any of that, right? I mean, that is all important and we all have to do it. But I wonder if it's easy for you to say, a woman of some means who's had a lot of success in her life and who got there by burning out and who is now saying, oh, wait a minute, let's not do it this way anymore.
Well, it's hard because our culture is so screwed up.
Yeah.
There is that prevalent assumption that if you burn out, if you are up all night, you're going to be better at finding a job or making ends meet, when in fact the opposite is true. Each one of us can tell from our own personal experience. When we're exhausted, when we're burnt out, we're less creative, we are much more reactive. We have all the evidence in front of us that's not the case, but nevertheless, it is a very, very entrenched collective delusion, so I can understand why you're asking this question.
Do you think the company you founded, do you think the Huffington Post helped get us to where we are today with needing to be plugged in?
Unfortunately, this is just something that has happened because of so many factors and so many companies. It's our smartphones, it's Facebook, it's Twitter, it's the Huffington Post, it's every digital media company. It's really the times we're living through. But what is great is that in the last year, we've begun to have a fascinating conversation around the need to disconnect. Suddenly, these things, meditation, sleep, renewal, have gone from the pages of the Yoga Journal to the front pages of the Wall Street Journal and The Economist.
I want you to do something for me. Think for a minute about the Arianna Huffington of 2005 as she was launching the Huffington Post. Tell me what you would tell yourself from 10 years ago, having come through this and now, found your moment of zen, if you will.
I would tell myself to stop worrying and get more sleep.
But would you be where you are today? That's the point.
Oh, absolutely. I would not only be where I am, I would be where I am with less damage to my health, my relationships, less worry and anxiety. I have 55 pages of scientific endnotes in the book. So this is not a matter of one woman's opinion or one woman's experience. This is simply collecting all the data.
What's it like to work for you? If I walk into the Huffington Post today, right, I mean, am I going to see this all reflected?
Yes, absolutely. First of all, 4 years ago, we opened 2 nap rooms And I encourage everybody who is tired during the day to have a nap instead of a fifth cup of coffee or a third cinnamon bun.
Have you ever used those nap rooms?
Well, actually, I have, but I also have a couch in my office, and I don't want to occupy the nap room, but my office is sort of has all glass, and when I would have a nap, I would normally close the curtain, and now I don't, because I feel that it's a really good message when I'm seen actually napping on the job to actually make it clear that it's perfectly okay.
Arianna Huffington, you know her from the Huffington Post. Her book is called Thrive. Arianna, thanks very much.
Thank you so much.
This final note on the way out today, which is either incredibly geeky, incredibly cool, or more likely a combination of the two. Tomorrow is, as you have no doubt heard, Pi Day, March the 14th, 314-314, which is Pi 3.14. It is also, as we all know, 2015, which makes it 3-14-15, 3.1415, pi to the fourth decimal place. So here comes the cool part. And if you've stuck with me for this long, thank you very much. I appreciate that. Tomorrow at 9:26 a.m., MIT, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, is going to announce its admissions decisions. That is 3-14-15-926, 3.1415926, pi to the seventh decimal, which is pretty cool, right?
Marketplace is produced in association with the University of Southern California's Annenberg School for Communication and Journalism.
All right, it's quitting time. Quitting time on a Friday to boot. Today, the Dow off 145 points, 0.8%. The NASDAQ down 21 points, 0.4%. The S&P 500 gave back 12 points, 0.6%. Our theme music was composed by B.J. Lederman. Marketplace was developed by J.J. Yor. Tommy Andres is the acting senior producer. Deborah Clark is the permanent vice president and executive producer. I'm Kai Rizdahl. We'll see you Monday, everybody. This is APM.
Hey there, I'm Bridget, co-host of Million Bazillion, Marketplace's podcast for kids about money. I want to tell you about our email newsletter course, Million Bazillion Academy. In this new and improved course, we'll help your kids learn about crypto, credit cards, and inflation in just 6 weeks. Each lesson comes with a podcast episode, a fun cartoon, discussion questions, and an activity that lets kids apply what they're learning in the real world. You can start at any time and work at your own pace. Sign up today at marketplace.org/academy.